shooting from the lip.
We're taking no prisoners here. Real opinions for real people.
John Gaunt, shooting from the lip.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Shooting from the Lip with me, John Gaunt, on Sputnik International. Let's get straight into the programme today. Let's talk to the former MEP and the owner of H. Foreman & Sons. His name is Lance Foreman and he joins me now.
Shooting from the Lip.
Good afternoon, Lance.
Yeah, good afternoon and Happy New Year to you, John.
Well, Happy New Year to you. I don't know whether it's going to be a prosperous one, though. Let's get started with the lockdown. Did Boris have any choice but to bring in the new lockdown?
Well, personally, I think he did have a choice. And, you know, the choice is obviously, do I do it or don't I do it? I don't think that lockdowns work. If lockdowns did work, we wouldn't have to do a second one and a third one. So I don't think that lockdown is the right strategy for the UK or indeed for any part of the globe. You know, my view is and has always been that, you know, you have to save lives and you have to look at where most people are. You know, it's mostly the old and the vulnerable that are dying and they're the people that need to be protected. The only way we will survive this virus long term is by there being a sort of immunity, you know, either via the vaccine or natural immunity from people having had the disease. And, you know, if it is a virus that 95% of people get through, then, you know, younger people, you know, should be allowed to just continue. Right. I just don't think we should be locking down the entire economy and causing other terrible health issues. You know, people failing to get to hospital, the mental health issues, our kids' education. I just think the balance there is wrong. So there was a huge amount of pressure on Boris to do this. There's all the arguments about whether the NHS can cope with a huge spike. So I understand all those arguments, but, you know, we've known that since March.
Okay.
And I think, you know, we've had the Nightingale hospitals. Yes, we haven't had staffing to manage, but there, you know, there potentially was a way around that. You know, we've had plenty of time to think about a better way of dealing with this, but I don't believe that lockdown is the answer.
Well, let's just examine that. I mean, you say the lockdowns haven't worked. Well, the first one worked because its objective, wasn't it, was to basically push down the curve, and it achieved that. It gave the NHS time. Would you not accept that?
No, I don't accept that because the curve had already peaked before the lockdown started. You know, the curve had peaked a week before lockdown. Now, you do get a two-week delay in the, you know, in the fatalities coming through, but we had already peaked before the lockdown was introduced. So I don't agree with that at all. All you, you know, people will either get this virus or they won't get the virus. We still don't completely understand how it's transmitted. And, you know, it's my view that, you know, people will either get it or they won't. And if you lock people down for a while, all you're doing is delaying the time before the people that will be vulnerable to it will eventually get it.
Well, you're saying that, but he was looking at one in 50 people in England having it. And where you're based in London, one in 35. Surely he had to lock down.
Well, again, you know, you can dispute those figures too and whether the tests are truly accurate tests and what they're testing for. You know, I think one of the biggest problems here is that there are many scientists with very different views as to how to approach this. And, you know, I'm not a scientist, but I do listen to all of the views. And there are equally eminent scientists on all sides of the argument, but the government are only taking advice, seemingly, from one group of scientists. You know, rather than having debates in the media and you hear one group of scientists, you know, on one occasion, another group on another occasion, I think that they all need to be together in a room debating it with the politicians there so we can all hear the arguments and you can actually hear the rationales for how they arrive at a certain decision.
Well, I think that's a good idea, but SAGE is their group, are the people who should advise them. The alternative SAGE is not really saying anything different at the moment. They believe this lockdown's necessary, don't they?
I'm not sure that they do, actually. And certainly the World Health Organization has criticised this lockdown. You know, as I say, if lockdowns worked, we wouldn't need to be on the third one by now.
Why are most countries doing lockdowns then, if that's the case? Even Sweden.
They all seem to be following up one another, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's the right solution.
Most of them are doing it. Sweden was always held up as the example. Sweden are now in lockdown, aren't they?
You know, we're in unprecedented times, and, you know, it's not as though there's a model for us to follow. If, heaven forbid, in 5 years' time, the same thing happened again, you know, would we go through exactly the same, you know, follow exactly the same routine that we followed this time? I really am not sure that locking down is the solution.
Okay.
You know, the vaccine, you know, let's hope the vaccines work. You know, if the vaccines work, they're no different to somebody having had COVID and then becoming immune. You know, at the moment, there are millions of people in the UK that have had COVID and are immune. Why do they need to be locked down now?
Well, I think that's one of the big questions, isn't it? They're not quite sure if you do become immune. I mean, somebody in my family has just had it, but does that mean they can't get it again? I think the scientists are still out on that one, aren't they?
And that is the problem. People don't, you know, even the scientists don't really fully understand the science at the moment. But what we do know is that by locking down, we're creating, you know, all sorts of other problems for ourselves. Health problems, economic problems, educational problems. There's never really been a cost-benefit analysis. We haven't actually looked at, you know, the costs and the benefits of different options, of, you know, different ways of dealing with this, and made a decision. We seem to be jumping from, you know, one solution to the next based on the latest figures, you know, that have arrived half a day beforehand.
Are you frightened of getting it yourself?
No, I'm not in the slightest bit frightened. In fact, you know, my parents in their 80s, they were sort of pretty much locked in their apartment for the last 6 months. They went to get the vaccine 2 weeks ago, and both of them, a week after having the vaccine, got COVID. It was the first time they'd been out their apartment. And, you know, my mum was on a drip and is still on oxygen, you know, 10 days later. A friend of mine under the age of 60 with no underlying health problems died from COVID a couple of weeks ago. So I completely and fully understand the seriousness of this, but it doesn't change my view on, you know, okay, how to deal with it. You know, I don't think anything would have changed whether we had the lockdowns or didn't have the lockdowns, but I just think we're creating massive long-term damage to our economy. And I just don't think people aren't really seeing the long-term effects of that yet. Because at the moment, you know, those, certainly the public sector, you know, they're still doing their jobs from home and getting paid. In the private sector, people are still collecting their furlough. But at some stage, we're going to have to pay this all back. And I just don't think, you know, I think people are very supportive of the government actions at the moment because it's not hitting their pockets. But once the economy does start to feel the effects of this, I think we'll, you know, have some severe doubts as to whether or not the actions that we've taken have been the right ones.
OK, let's go on to that in a moment. Just before we finish on this little bit, will you have the vaccine? You're not an anti-vaxxer, I presume.
No, I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I will have it. I do have some concerns that, you know, we don't have enough information on the effects of these vaccines. I wouldn't be recommending to my kids to have it. I certainly would be recommending to my parents to have it. And in fact, look what happened. They had it and then got COVID. So I think on balance, you know, I don't think the global health industry would allow a vaccine to come through that wasn't entirely safe. So I'm certainly not anti-vaccine. And I think, you know, that obviously the quicker we can roll it out, the better, because we need to nail this thing.
Now, of course, we're leading Europe on it at the most. At the moment, we've done more than any other country in the EU. Not as many as...
That's not saying very much, John.
No, it isn't. No, you're right. That's where I was leading to. Do you think we can achieve these very, very ambitious targets that Hancock and Boris has set? I mean, do you think we can get people vaccinated quickly? Because I'm not seeing it myself. I would have brought the army in by now to handle the logistics of this. And of course, it's Tony Blair who said, let's just go for a one jab solution. Why aren't we bringing in more expertise?
I have absolutely no idea. It is absolutely balmy to me that we're not doing this at a rate of knots, 24/7, you know, the cost of it is negligible compared to the cost of the damage to our economy through, you know, the furlough schemes and so on. Even if, I can't remember how much the AstraZeneca vaccine costs, but even if it costs, I don't know, I think it's £10, you know, £10, I think it's actually £3.50. But even if we said to them, look, rush this, do whatever you need to do to make sure we can produce, you know, 10 million in the coming week rather than 2 million a month or whatever, and we'll pay you £10 a head. Even if you vaccinate half the population, at £10 a head, you're talking about £300 million. That's nothing when you're spending £14 billion a month on furlough.
Absolutely.
You know, we should be throwing everything at this, the kitchen sink at this, to make sure that we can get people vaccinated and just get back to normality as a matter of absolute urgency. I heard on the radio this morning that Public Health England are saying they're not prepared to work on Sundays to get it done.
They're not going to deliver the vaccines. No, you're right. It's a disgrace.
Yeah, it's madness. I mean, it's absolute madness. And, you know, it's not rocket science training somebody to give a vaccine. You know, we should be doing this now. We should be, you know, training people to do it and just gearing up and making sure that whatever needs to be done to ease that supply chain should be done. You know, we've spent as a country, I think we spent £70 million, or we gave £70 million to Oxford to help them develop this vaccine. I don't believe other countries gave Oxford that funding. That's taxpayers' money to make sure this thing happens speedily. And as a result of that, you know, we should be, you know, first in the queue to take advantage and make sure we get out of this. And, you know, that's what the Israelis have done, and we should be doing the same.
So where does the book stop? Is it with Hancock, who hasn't done the app either, or is it Boris Johnson? Why has he been accused of being a ditherer and delaying things? Do you think that's fair criticism?
I just don't know whether they've been getting conflicting advice, but they seem to be acting on the last bit of information that comes along rather than actually having a strategy right from the start to deal with this. You know, if you believe that the solution to this COVID was the vaccine, and I don't believe that was necessarily the solution, I believe it was part of the solution. I do believe in, you know, natural immunity from having had it as well, you know, being a big part of it. But if your view was that, you know, the vaccine is going to be our solution, we've known this since last February, March. You know, we should have been putting in place every single thing we needed to put in place to make sure that as soon as this vaccine is ready, we can just pump it out there and roll it out. And, you know, we just don't seem to be in that position at the moment, which is strange to me. I mean, you know, it's something you could have planned for.
Well, the blame for that has to lie with the government, doesn't it?
Blame does lie with government. You know, it lies with government. It lies with, you know, the prime people it lies with is government. But it should also lie with all those people that should have been putting pressure on government, like the opposition, the media. You know, why haven't people been chasing the government on this for months too? You know, why, you know, the media have been at these press conferences sort of day after day, week after week for months. You know, why, you know, back in May, didn't any journalist sort of say, by the way, you know, what plans are you making to put the vaccine in place? I'm not saying it's their responsibility, but questions weren't asked either. No one's really thought this through, and I think that's a tragedy.
OK, they all seem like fair points to me. We're going to break there for a minute if we can, Lance. And then in the second half of the show, I do want to move on and talk about the economic effects that you've alluded to already and how it's affected your business. Also moving on to the EU as well, because we could almost forget that we've got a trade deal and we've got ads. Yeah, so that's it. That's the first half of Shooting From The Lip with Lance Foreman and myself, John Gaunt, on Shooting From The Lip. We'll be back with the second part, Don't Dare Go Away, just after this short break.
Shooting From The Lip.
We're taking no prisoners here. Real opinions for real people.
John Gaunt, Shooting From The Lip.
Hi, welcome back to Shooting From The Lip on Sputnik International with me, John Gaunt, and my special guest, Lance Foreman. Lance, of course, you're also a big employer. You're involved in the hospitality industry because you smoke salmon and you sell that salmon into some of the top hotels and restaurants right across the UK. How has it affected your business, and has the support you've got from government been enough, including this new package that Rishi has announced this week?
Well, that's a very good question, and both helped and hindered our business, and that's because we're quite well diversified here. So, yes, you're absolutely right. We do supply smoked salmon and other food products to restaurants, hotels, caterers, And that business has completely fallen off a cliff. To be honest, it happened last March and it never really recovered. I think, you know, if you look at the restaurant trade, I think local restaurants were doing okay. You know, people still felt the need to have some, you know, restaurant experience. As we know, you know, in the summer through the Help Out to Eat Out scheme, you know, so I think local restaurants were actually doing quite well. People were sort of, you know, they weren't working, they were venturing out, walking up to the, you know, walking to their local restaurants and so on. But the customers we tend to supply in that industry aren't so much the local restaurants, but the sort of, you know, the well-known restaurants in the West End and the city. And many of them are in hotels. A lot of the hotels where they do sort of, you know, big corporate events and banquets and so on. And that has never recovered, basically, because there's no business trade. You know, business people aren't going into the city in the West End. Foreign tourists aren't coming over to the UK and staying at these posh hotels and so on and dining out in sort of fine dining restaurants. So that trade has literally just collapsed. And I can't actually see that coming back this year at all.
Hold on, let me just question on that. You say it's going to be at least the whole of 2021 before any of that business is back? It'll be next Christmas time?
Yeah, I just don't think that will come back at all this year. Mainly because it's going to be at least before the summer, before you start getting business people coming into town again. Foreign travel, you know, Europe is behind us at the moment on COVID. International travel, you know, people will still be nervous, I would say, throughout much of this year. So that's not going to really come back. And even the sort of corporate eventing, you know, conferences and so on, I think people will just be nervous, you know, for this year about having these huge events. And most of them are planned a year in advance. You know, it's not as though, you know, you suddenly turn up at a big sort of, you know, charity dinner or something. You know, it's organized a week or two beforehand. These things normally take a year of planning. So I can't see that industry recovering at all this year. You know, a lot of the big contract caterers we know that employ literally thousands upon thousands of people have laid them all off. They're not coming back. And, you know, they're not coming back for quite some time. So I just think that industry has been very, very severely damaged. But as I say, I think local restaurants, you know, might start picking up again if they've been able to survive, you know, the little bit of help that they've had from Rishi Sunak. And that's not a huge amount of help, because his strategy for helping the economy was not to help business, but it was to help the employees of those businesses through the furlough scheme. And the problem is, if you don't support the business, and the business goes bust, then when furlough ends, those employees aren't going to have a job to go back to, because the business won't exist. And that is a massive problem in the hospitality sector.
So how should he have done it then? If you were the Chancellor, I know we've spoken about this before, but tell me how you would have approached it.
Well, it's you know, something I discussed with you in last March.
Yeah, it was.
You know, he should have treated this. And, you know, I've personally been through some severe catastrophes in my own business, a fire, a flood, a compulsory purchase. And so we know, you know, how to deal with the crisis. This was, you know, from a business perspective, not really that different to any other, you know, major crisis. You know, it could be that, you know, like there was a wildfire running through Australia and all the restaurants had to close. This was, you know, an invisible wildfire, you know, this virus. And basically the way you deal with it in that situation is you basically treat it like a business interruption, and you ensure the losses that business makes as a result of, in this case, the government action. And if the businesses were basically insured by the government for that business interruption, they could have carried on paying their staff, because that's what you do in a business interruption claim.
Yeah, sure.
They could have carried on paying their fixed overhead, so their rent and their rates. You know, they could have carried on paying their rates, which is essentially a tax, which would be going back to the government anyway. But it would have meant that all their variable overheads, their variable costs, they don't pay. So they wouldn't be buying food and buying ingredients. So that, you know, they wouldn't have that cost, but the fixed cost would be paid, which would mean that once they're able to get the business back up and running again, it's in place. It's all ready to go. And that is, I believe, how the government should have approached this, but they didn't. And that's why, you know, so many businesses have gone to the wall. And the problem with allowing businesses to go to the wall is that when they go bust, they end up not paying their creditors, and then their creditors go bust, and you get this domino effect, and you know the and that is, you know, I just think it was very badly misjudged.
He's not looking like he's going to change tack, though. The rumours coming out of the City and out of the Exchequer is that he's going to extend furlough. You know, that this is, you know, it depends who you believe, that this is going to go on well into the summer. He's going to keep doing the same thing. Would you like to see some kind of U-turn on it?
Well, you know, it's a funny old thing because, you know, when you're basically dishing out money to people, furlough, it's almost, in some respect, you could actually sort of conceive of it as a tax refund. You know, people have been paying tax at 25%, you know, goodness knows how long. It's almost as though you're saying, well, maybe we should have only taxed you at 20% for the last 5 years and we're giving you all this money as a refund. So I don't think that's the problem. It's not the way I would have done it. I don't think that's the problem. The problem is, as I say, it comes back to the businesses. If they don't have jobs to come back to because you've allowed the businesses to fail, then I think furlough is just delaying the inevitable.
Okay.
And so I just think the strategy was, you know, and that's why we're not seeing the effects of it now. And that's why people are happy with lockdowns now, because they're still getting their money.
Sure.
But we haven't really seen, you know, haven't started to see the real effects of all of this. And we'll only start to see that when furlough comes to an end, because many of those people that are furloughed will not have a job to go back to.
Absolutely. So when you talk about hospitality, do you feel they've been unfairly treated? I mean, we've heard a lot from pub owners who said, look, we became completely COVID compliant. We paid a fortune to do that. So did restaurants. And we haven't had the help and support. And then secondly, Lance, how big will the contraction be in that hospitality industry when it eventually hits the fan, as you're suggesting? How many are going to go out of business?
Oh, I mean, I think the industry employs about 1.5 million people, and it wouldn't surprise me in the slightest if half of those people become unemployed.
Blimey.
I think it's going to be absolutely massive. You know, I really genuinely think it's going to be massive. And, you know, many of those people have already effectively been made unemployed if they haven't, you know, been made actually unemployed right now. Many businesses are sort of helping, in inverted commas, their staff who they should be making redundant, but, you know, they're helping them by saying they're going to be on furlough because that way they'll get a little bit more help from the government. But actually, they're not really employed on furlough. They're actually unemployed and, you know, being helped out by the government with, you know, the most generous unemployment benefit that we've ever had.
Okay, let's go back, if we can, to the lockdown. What do you think about, some people are saying now civil liberties are being attacked. You know, the police are now going to be able to stop you on the street. If you haven't got a mask, you're going to get an on-the-spot fine, £200. Some police want the ability to enter houses if they think you're not being COVID compliant. As a libertarian, does that worry you?
Yeah, it severely worries me. And I think, you know, you have to be able to, you know, bring people with you when you enforce the law. The law has to be a reasonable law and people have to be able to buy into it. And I think that once it, you know, once it goes too far, you know, I just think you create very severe dangers. And, you know, one does have a sense that they're almost testing the system to see how far they can push it. But I personally think that this should be left down to people's own personal responsibility. And I do understand the arguments that, you know, this is not like crossing a road because you're putting other people at danger if you're out and about.
Sure.
You know, you're still, to some extent, I suppose, putting other people at danger if you run into a street. You know, you're still putting the car driver at danger. You know, I do understand the arguments, but I do think it's gone too far. You know, we are not an authoritarian country. We're not China. People often say, well, look how well China's done, but you can't compare us to China. China has millions of people in slave camps. In, you know, we're not the same as China. We are a liberal Western democracy. And I think that, you know, personal responsibility is absolutely crucial. And I'm very worried about the way in which people are being treated. You listen to some of the phone-ins and some of the tragedies that the stories people tell. It's heartbreaking.
Okay. What do you think about China as a whole? I mean, some people are saying they should be held accountable for what's happened, especially Trump was saying that. And now we hear that the World Health Organization investigators are not being allowed into the lab in Wuhan. What do you make of that?
Yeah, well, it doesn't surprise me. I mean, does it surprise you? I mean, it shouldn't surprise us. You know, there's a lot we don't know about what went on in China. The Americans are now saying that they have evidence that, you know, whilst it was always suspected that the virus started in the lab in Wuhan. They now have pretty much incontrovertible evidence that that's indeed where it did commence, and they want to go in and find out more, and the Chinese won't let them. Well,
okay.
You know, why am I not surprised?
Now, before you go, 2 minutes. It's unbelievable, this. 2 minutes left. Tell me about the Brexit trade deal. Are you happy?
I'm sort of reasonably happy. You know, life's never perfect. You know, we've done Brexit. We can, you know, completely walk away if we want to at some, you know, later date. Yeah, like, you know, life's not perfect, but when you put into perspective, you know, what's been going on with COVID, you know, the difficulties with we may or may not have faced with Brexit, almost insignificant. The key thing is we did it. The key thing is we now have political buy-in from all the major parties. It's happened. We've got it out of the way. And hopefully, you know, in time we can, you know, we'll start to see the, you know, the positive effects. The fact is, we've now done a deal with the EU. It looks like, you know, we've done these rollover deals with over 60 other countries.
Liz Truss.
It looks like we will be doing trade deals with the USA and with the CPTPP, which is sort of one of the largest trade blocs around the world. So, you know, we will eventually, you know, be doing in a much better position to secure trade around the world. What I would like to see, actually, and I shall be putting this question to the Prime Minister, I have an opportunity to do so. But one of the things I would like to see is us seizing the opportunity on deregulation. You know, 87% of small businesses in the UK never traded directly with the EU. They didn't import or export from the EU, and yet they all had to suffer all the EU rules and regulations. And what I would like to see is them being surveyed and asked, you know, what are the top 100 burdensome rules and regulations that you've had to face? And let's get a list of these regulations and let the government examine them. Let's just scrap them. We don't need them. Let's, you know, that would be a really great, you know, first of all, it would help those small businesses. And, you know, believe me, they need every bit of help they can get at the moment. But also it will be a visible sort of daily reminder of why we did this.
Okay.
You know, so I would like to start, you know, seeing deregulation coming into play as much as, you know, all the positive opportunities through global trade.
Okay, got to finish in a second. So are you optimistic at the moment? Well, obviously heading, some people say, for a double dip recession, but will Great Britain come back? Will we get through this?
I'm the permanent optimist, John. So even in a crisis, I always see an opportunity. And, you know, the world is a dynamic place. And Britain, you know, we're full of young entrepreneurial people that always spot, you know, opportunities and, you know, want to seize the moment. And usually, you know, it's change that creates opportunity and big change that creates the biggest opportunities. And boy, oh boy, we're going through the biggest change we've ever had, I think, in the last, you know, 100 years. So there are some great opportunities out there. Britain is, you know, Britain is one of the leading global players in tech, and that's where it is at the moment. And in, you know, pharmaceuticals too. I mean, the fact that we, you know, we were one of the countries that developed the vaccine, you know, these are great things. And I think there's some, you know, really outstanding opportunities for our country at the moment.
Okay, got to stop there. But thank you very much indeed. That's Lance Foreman. That was Shooting From The Lip with me, John Gaunt, and the thoughts of Lance. I'll be back next week with somebody just as forthright, hopefully. Until then, thanks for listening.
Shooting From The Lip.
If you've got a view, I want to hear it. If you agree, I want to hear it. If you disagree, get in touch. Tell me why I'm wrong, but you better have a good argument.
This is Shooting From The Lip.